The Elastico podcast with me, Christopher Atkins, and I'm joined once more by the Elastico.com's Rio Coimbra. Hello, Rio.
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
I'm good, thank you. And I'm sure our listeners remember I promised them James Young against them this week, returning, but unfortunately, James is otherwise engaged. But we've got an even better guest for them this week. It's a award winning blogger. We have Christian Bengtsson of the Anything Palmeiras blog. Hello, Christian.
Hello, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. And congratulations, first of all, on your Football Bloggers Award.
Oh, thank you very much. That was a bit of a surprise, actually. I'm very happy, of course. And well, I think that just shows the size of the Palmeiras supporters. There's a lot of Palmeiras supporters out there in Brazil, outside of Brazil, and I'm sure they just voted for me because I think that my blog is still the only source for Palmeiras information in English. So that's where they go when they need to, you know, spread the word about Palmeiras outside of Brazil as well.
Well, when I announced that you'd be coming on the show on Twitter, I immediately had four Palmeiras fan sites and news sites follow me. So I was immediately alerted as to your fame in the Palmeiras community.
Brilliant fame and responsibility that comes with, I'm sure.
Well, we'll get on to Palmeiras a bit later. It'd be a shame to have you on and not discuss your specialist subject, but we'll head straight into some of the news from the weekend. So starting with the weekend's matches, there's been some big games, Palmeiras included. We'll start down in Minas Gerais, though. Where Atlético Mineiro ran out 6-0 winners against Figueirense, Rio. And a return to form on a sad occasion on the one hand for Ronaldinho.
Yeah, I think it was something like four games that Atlético hadn't won. So, you know, for a title contender, they really needed a result out of this game to, you know, to sort of still claim any you know, fight for the title against Fluminense, who are also, you know, who have been in great form. But you're right, you know, Ronaldinho has been having some family problems. I think his stepfather passed away, and also his mother has been having some health issues and has been in the hospital. So it's been a tough time for him, but, you know, he sort of responded in the best way possible on the field. Atlético ran out 6-0 winners against Figueirense, and Ronaldinho had, you know, a perfect performance. 3 goals, 2 assists. Just, you know, looked like the old Barcelona Ronaldinho. So it was, you know, it was an emotional day for him. After his first goal, he broke down into tears. But like I said, he responded in the best way possible during this tough time for him.
Christian, I guess what it does show is, as we saw even in his days at Flamengo, which weren't always the happiest, that when Ronaldinho really sets his mind to it, there's still not many players in the league and maybe further afield who can compete with him.
Oh, I agree with you. I personally always really appreciated his playing style. I was quite upset about the way that he conducted his return to Brazilian football. I think that's a shame. Such a great player and such a great a model for many people and many kids. And I really think that he conducted that return to Brazil very badly. But I think that as he's really picking up again, and as you said, setting his mind to play football and getting over. Maybe he's even using, you know, football as, again, a way to deal with his personal problems and be able to leave that behind a bit and refocus something else. He's been very famous also for his you know, nights out and drinking and women and all that. So maybe all these family issues finally makes him realize a bit what is important in life, and that he respects also his professional side, which he hasn't always been doing the last year or so.
Now, that's certainly been the message coming out of Atletico today, is that I think Cuca came out and then Joe both to say how professional Ronaldinho has been. I think his stepdad passed away within 24 hours of the match, and Joe said that he came in and he asked specifically to play. He wanted to make his mark in that way and remember his family member on the field and give a performance for him. So I guess we all pass on our condolences to Ronaldinho. But as Rio said, then Atletico's title chase continues in fine style. And Rio Fluminense kept their 6-point lead at the top. It wasn't a convincing showing against Botafogo. They left it very late to show up at all, really. But that man, Fred, did it again.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, what counts is the 3 points. And like you said, it wasn't the most convincing win by Fluminense. You know, I think they really only sort of got into the game in the last 20 minutes or so. You know, even though Fred sort of drew all the media attention for his late goal, or, well, not that late, but, you know, match-winning goal after a late goal last week. You know, I think who deserves mention is also Diego Cavalieri, the goalkeeper for Fluminense, who to me has been sort of by far the goalkeeper of the season for the Brasileirão. And, you know, he's the former Palmeiras keeper who for a couple of years played was backup for Pepe Reina at Liverpool, but never really got a chance at Liverpool. But, you know, this season for Fluminense, he's simply been phenomenal. And Botafogo had a lot of chances, and Cavalieri is the one that made sure that the scoreboard still read 0-0. But, yeah, you know, I think Botafogo were the better team, but this Fluminense side is resilient. You know, they simply have a lot of fight in them, and they don't give up. And, you know, if you don't score against them, then they'll come back and they'll punish you. And that's what Fregi did.
And Christian, Rio mentioned there Cavalieri used to play for Palmeiras. There's been a lot of talk during the internationals with Argentina about whether he should have been called up to that squad. And so first I'll get your opinion on that. And also, I guess in the same way as Palmeiras are a very different team when Barcos starts up front for them, Fregi's influence as a target man for Fluminense is very important to their style of play, and he's really at times his goals have dragged them to this title challenge.
No, completely. I think that these two key players really make a difference, and I think that both of them deserve a shot in the national team, and especially Cavalieri, of course, knowing very well from his years at Palmeiras, and he's a tremendous keeper, a very serious athlete. I think a lot of Palmeiras are still not upset, I'd say. Now, of course, they understand that you know, for being the second keeper at a team, especially when the first keeper is someone like Marcos, no, you have to bide your time. You know, you have to have a lot of patience because it will take many years before you get your shots. And Cavalier was, you know, he was playing very well and was starting to get the opportunities at Palmeiras. But I think he got a bit restless and he wanted to try something new, and he went to the UK, and as Rio said, he didn't really make it there. But he's a tremendous athlete, a really good keeper, and I think he certainly deserves his shots at fame at the national squad as well. So wishing him all luck.
And of course, the other big game of the weekend then, unfortunately, Christian, was the big derby match in Sao Paulo between Sao Paulo themselves and Palmeiras. It wasn't the best game for your side. I'm sure there was some sadness in your household yesterday. But Sao Paulo themselves, I guess we have to give credit. They play very well.
Yes, they did. I think that there's no dispute. There was also a lot of talk about the referee chosen for the game, Paulo César de Oliveira. who has a very bad track record against Palmeiras, at least from the Palmeirense point of view. But he, I think he performed his duties perfectly yesterday. And, well, there's not much to say. São Paulo were the better team from start to finish. And, well, I think Kleiner, he tried something new. He had sort of five people in the midfield instead of the four he's been using successfully the last few rounds. And we saw our man up front, Barcos, he got very isolated, and Valdivia and Carvalho together didn't work on the midfield, and São Paulo just steamrolled all over us. It was a difficult game for sure.
Rio, on the São Paulo front, then we better mention Denilson's wonder goal. It was one of the best goals of the season, certainly, if not the best. Arsenal fans, I'm sure, have all seen it by now. And also, Luis Fabiano keeps on scoring for them. Another example of the importance of a top-class striker.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talked about last week about Fabiano's great season thus far, and this was another stellar performance by him. And, you know, he was coming back from injury. He actually had to get subbed out towards the end of the game because of a dead leg. So, you know, he didn't even get that much time on the pitch, and he wasn't even looking 100%. But he still got two goals. You know, one was kind of an easy tap-in after great work from Lucas. The other was a pretty stellar goal. And you're right, that the Newson goal, it was amazing. So for anybody that's listening and hasn't seen that, go check that out on YouTube, because, you know, it was quite a goal. And it was also the Newson's first goal for São Paulo in something like 80 or 90 something matches. So, you know, it's quite the opening goal for his São Paulo career. And it was kind of a nice team moment to see, you know, pretty much all the São Paulo players go and celebrate with them. And, you know, it clearly meant a lot to him. So it's moments like that sort of, you know, make the game better for fans. But, you know, at the end of the day, like you guys just mentioned, you know, São Paulo sort of were very comfortable winners in this match and showed their class. And yeah, I think it's also a testament to the wonderful job that Nate Franco is doing over there.
We'll move away from this weekend's fixtures then. There's been some other pretty major news in the Brazilian football world this week. We were expecting to do a segment on the national team and their performances against Argentina today. But the game in Resistencia was called off, unfortunately, with a floodlight failure, meaning that the players were unable to play. There's been a lot of criticism of both football associations this week, principally the Argentine Association for the location of the game. Some felt it was a politically motivated decision. But the two of you, first of all, I'll go to Christian. Do you see the value in these Super Classico games where it's only the domestic-based players, or do you think if they're going to play these games, they should fit in with the FIFA calendar and have a kind of full-strength side available?
I think, actually, the idea in itself to have a Super Classico with only players active in Brazil or Argentina, I think that is actually quite interesting. But I do think that they really need to put it in a FIFA date if that is the case. The problem in Brazil is that the players are already playing too many games. And with the non-syncing of these major FIFA dates, or whatever you have it, with the Brazilian championships, that is just, I think it's shocking the way that the Brazilian Football Federation still keeps disrespecting the total planning that all Brazilian teams are trying to do. And of course, in the end, that's also the fault of the teams, because if they really wanted to, of course, they could just gang up against the CBF and speak with one voice, and they would surely be able to make some changes to that. But in the end, it's just everyone for themselves, and they try to, instead of acting collectively, they try to get benefits for their club when they can and complain when they can't. So in the end of the day, I think it's us, football lovers, and the crowds that lose out on this, because we see a lot of lack of interest for games, both in the national championships and for this Super Classico. I mean, seriously, you don't hear many Brazilians talking about it. It should be such a great event, football speaking, but people just don't really care. And they when it's canceled, they just shrug it off and go, okay, whatever. So I think it's sad because it, instead of increasing value of a big event like this, it actually diminishes it.
Rio, would you agree with those sentiments?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much spot on. You know, I do agree that, you know, in a lot of ways, it only sort of furthers this devaluation of the Brasileiro, where, you know, for so much of the season, so many games in the Brasileiro, you know, a lot of teams are missing, you know, players that are playing for their national sides. And, you know, that combined with sort of the early overlap with the Libertadores, where a lot of big teams end up resting players during the Brasileiro, you know, you end up having teams like Santos who, you know, Neymar plays, you know, maybe half the season, which is kind of ridiculous, really.
On Neymar, really, with this, he got sent off in his last game against, was it Grêmio for Santos? And now he's got Brazilian international fixtures against Japan and Iraq. It will come to nearly the end of October, and he'll have played 10 league games all campaign. And, of course, for the CBF, they want to use his image and his status to market the Brasileirão. So it's kind of it has a very negative effect on being able to attract sponsors if the stars aren't there for half the season.
It does. You're absolutely right. But, you know, at the same time, you know, the CBF also want him to be the market boy for the national team as well, for all these, you know, friendlies that Brazil play all over the world and get paid a lot of money to play. So, you know, it's sort of, there is that sort of natural conflict there. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, it devalues the competition. And you know, the Brasileiro has a lot of wonderful players, a lot of teams with big tradition and big history. And, you know, if these teams had their full strength size to play all year round, you know, the league table will look very different. You know, Santos would certainly be doing a lot better. Corinthians would probably be further up the table if it weren't for the conflicts with the Libertadores early in the year. So, you know, at the end of the year, you look at the league table and there are kind of these question marks in your head about, well, what would have gone differently had it not been for these conflicts. And, you know, certainly things like, you know, like the Olympics certainly didn't help either with a lot of domestic players there. But, you know, going back to the Super Clásico and sort of the idea of a domestic-based team, I think that alone, if we're just talking about that concept, I do agree that it's a good idea. You know, so many great Brazilian players out there that play all over the world. You know, it's no secret how many Brazilian players are in practically every league across Europe, across Asia, Africa, wherever it is, you find Brazilian players. So it's a nice way to sort of give credit sometimes to players in Brazil that might occasionally not really be able to, you know, to fight their way into the full national team when there's so much competition. So I think it's sort of a nice way to acknowledge maybe some older players sometimes that wouldn't otherwise be getting a shout. And, you know, it's also a good way to get some of these young guys in, like Bernard and Wellington Nain, that won't necessarily get that full national team call up, but they sort of get the credit that they deserve in these games.
I'm sure we'll come back to scheduling issues and the troubles that having seasons and competitions that overlap later when we talk to you a bit about Palmeiras, Christian. But another related topic, I guess, is the exit of Alex de Souza from Fenerbahce. It was only a couple of weeks ago we were seeing him having a statue put up outside their stadium, and now he's departed in somewhat controversial circumstances. Neither the club nor the player can agree on quite what happened. But it seems, Palmeiras have made it very clear they're interested. Coritiba and Cruzeiro, as former clubs of Alex, are both expected to make their interest fairly clear in the coming time. But Christian, first of all, I'm sure you'd welcome him back at Palmeiras. What do you think your chances are?
Well, that's a hard question. Yes, you're right. I absolutely would love to see him back in flying our colors. Well, as you said, the former clubs are already showing interest and have explicitly said so. Alex himself, he says that, well, his return to Brazil, for starters, is already set. He's returning for sure, and he's going back to play football in Brazil. So I'm sure that as soon as he settles the more practical things about his move and settling in his family back in Brazil, he will be looking at where to play. And he has always said that he will be giving preference to the clubs where he has played before. So that would be Curitiba, Palmeiras, even Flamengo and Cruzeiro. Now, Flamengo, he didn't really have a great passing through that club. So we're talking basically Curitiba, Palmeiras, and Cruzeiro. And he's also said that he will end his career playing for Curitiba. So I guess it all boils down a bit to, first of all, if Alex is still keen on football for a few more years, or if he's already thinking about retirement. Because I think that if he's thinking already about retiring maybe 1 or 2 years' time, he might go to Curitiba already now, and that will be sort of the finishing off of his career in style. I believe that he would be doing that, because I think that he's not only a tremendous athlete, but he's also a very sincere and honest person, both on and off the pitch, a man of his word. So if he says that he's going to end his career at Curitiba, I think he will do that. He will honor his word. And I think he might even do that, even if Curitiba would play in the second division. This is, of course, only my personal idea. But I think that he would see this maybe sort of a last sacrifice to help the club where he was raised and where he trained for most of his youth years. So I could see in that sense, if Alex is thinking about finishing his career in 1 or 2 years' time, then he might go to Curitiba already. If he, on the other hand, thinks that he might have a few more years to go, I think that he will seriously consider Palmeiras and Cruzeiro. And although he said that Palmeiras is probably the most difficult club he's ever played for in terms of the political turmoil inside and the pressure from the supporters and all that, he had some glorious years here. I'm sure he has plenty of good memories, many titles, including the Libertadores Cup of 99. And, you have a few good things going for us. You have the Libertadores in 2013. Palmeiras is already classified because they won the Brazil Cup. You have the inauguration of the new stadium, which is being finished. So at the second half of 2013, Palmeiras will open up a brand new stadium. And, you have his former teammate from the golden years at Palmeiras, Cesar Sampaio, as the manager of football at Palmeiras currently. And, of course, Kleina, the coach, he was even the padrinho, sort of a best man at Alex's wedding many years back. And Kleina knows Alex very well from the youth academy years at Curitiba. So I think there's a lot of things that actually, if he's not going to Curitiba, and if Palmeiras maintain in the first division next year, I think we have actually the best chance of getting him to Palmeiras. That's more likely than him going to Cruzeiro. That's at least my feeling.
Rio, I know when the news broke, you said to me you'd love to see Alex at Flamengo. How exactly is Alex regarded in Brazilian football? He's in the way that he's been unlucky enough to, I guess, come up against so many great players in his position during his time, but he's still amassed a fair number of caps for the national team. What is his standing with the Brazilian public?
Well, I think older fans, recall his time in the Brasileiro, from the 90s and early 2000s. You know, certainly Palmeiras fans, Cruzeiro fans, and Curitiba fans all remember him quite fondly. And, my personal opinion is he's a fantastic player, very creative attacking midfielder. Doesn't quite have the pace that he used to have at 35, but still has great vision of the game, very experienced, very dangerous from set pieces. So I'm sure he still has a lot to contribute and offer at the age of 35. He did spend many years in Turkey. To some extent, he's sort of not been very much the center of attention for a lot of fans. And, you know, I always felt that even while he was at Turkey for many years, he did get, I think, 40 or 50 Brazil caps. I think he probably deserved it even more than that because, you know, he was playing a very high level, you know, playing Champions League football year after year and doing quite well. But, you know, there's obviously, you know, Palmeiras and Cruzeiro and Curitiba all really sort of going after him right now. But to some extent, I'm actually surprised there isn't more of a mass of clubs going for him. You know, if the way I see it, if you're practically any club in the Serie A, you should be interested in Alex and you should be sounding him out and seeing if he's interested. You know, there's plenty of clubs that could use him. You mentioned, I talked about Flamengo, of course, but, you know, anybody could use him. Santos, you know, just lost Ganso. And really they don't have that much depth in the creative midfield position. They have a lot of young guys out there that could play that role, but I think somebody like Alex would do a wonderful job over there. So, you know, people recognize him and recognize his talent and refer back to his time in the 90s and in the 2000s. But I think he probably deserves even more attention and his time at Turkey kind of made him a little bit forgotten to some people, and some of the younger fans don't quite recall him.
All right, well, we'll move on to the second part of the show, and we've mentioned it several times already, but we're going to focus specifically on Palmeiras now, as I'm sure Christian will fill us in more on in a minute. It's been a turbulent season for the Verdão this year. He's gone from drastic lows to the high of winning the Copa do Brasil back in June, and then again a bit of a low when Luis Felipe Scolari was eventually sacked last month. And we've had a bit of a revival, and then this weekend's results have seen Palmeiras' future swing right back into the balance again. So, Christian, you've had the Copa do Brasil win this year. But at the same time, you could be facing relegation. What are your views on 2012 so far?
Yeah, this is Palmeiras, right? It's a club always in it's chaos and it's a lot of passion and there's a lot of lack of good management on every level. So you have these extremes, and I'd say that the Brazil Cup was tremendously important for Palmeiras. Palmeiras hadn't won an important national title in 14 years. And you could really see that, especially among the young kids. You know, nobody wanted to be a Palmeirense. We had really difficulties and still have difficulties with the younger generations because they just see Palmeiras as a losing team, as a team that was a great team, but it's all, you know, in the history books. So that title was tremendously important. And I think that was due to the way that Filipão Scolari really managed to focus the squad, to try to protect them from everything around. That's always very, very difficult at Palmeiras. The pressure inside, the political controversies, the press, it's everything is very difficult at Palmeiras. And supporters, of course, are also very demanding. So Scolari actually managed to focus the group, and he himself, he's sort of the knockout phase of competition. That's where he really shines, where he's able to focus the players on a specific goal, and they will just do anything to reach that goal. And of course, also a lot of luck. You know, we can't really oversee the fact that, you know, we got lucky as well at the right time for once. And again, it was a tremendously important title. But it came at the cost as well. You know, it was difficult, and you had to give priority to the Brazil Cup, and the Brasileirão was sort of left at second place, and we lost a lot of valuable points that we are still trying to chase down today, and the situation is really, really complicated. I think that losing to São Paulo was not at all the end of the line. It was actually, I think many of us didn't really think the Palmeiras were going to win. In fact, we haven't beaten São Paulo at the Morumbi for a decade now. It's sad, but it's been 10 years since the last time. So actually, I think the crucial moment is starting as of next week, when we have three games against teams that are directly involved in the struggle for not being relegated, and specifically Curitiba. So we play Curitiba at home, and then we play Nautico away and Bahia also away. And I mean, we're 6 points behind Curitiba now. Curitiba is the first team that is safe from relegation at this point. So winning against Curitiba at home, then we have 3 points up to the safe zone with 9 rounds to go. So I think it's absolutely possible.
Yeah, Rio, I guess when you look at it in that respect, the three games coming up are eminently winnable for Palmeiras, but they're also the type of games that maybe Palmeiras haven't been winning this year when they should be for a club with the players they do have and the stature they do have. So once those games are out the way, there'll be 7 games left, I guess. By that point, they need to have closed the gap down from 6 points. Anything, say, 3 points and lower, they'll feel confident of staying up.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, the sort of 2 games before this São Paulo defeat that they had were 2 wins against Figueirense and Ponte Preta, who are sort of relegation contenders as well. So it was encouraging to see Palmeiras sort of make that comeback against those teams. Then they played this much stronger São Paulo side and sort of were shown that there is kind of a big difference in quality there. But like you guys just said, you know, these next 3 games are going to be very important, and they are very winnable games. You know, I think if Palmeiras don't walk away with at least 6 or 7 points from those 3 games, then, you know, there'd be some serious concerns that they might not escape relegation. Because after those 3 games, you know, the stretch of games towards the end of the season really isn't sort of that encouraging. You know, games against Cruzeiro, Internacional, Fluminense, Botafogo, those are all going to be very tough games. So, you know, these 3 games will be incredibly important, and it'll be interesting to see how this team mentally bounces back from this, you know, very discouraging defeat, right? Because it's not only did they walk away with 0 points from this game, but just the manner and style of the game were, you know, sort of disheartening for the team. So they need to sort of rally mentally and make sure that they get their heads focused again and sort of find that confidence that it'll take to get the points that they need.
Christian?
I think also that we, against São Paulo, we lost Valdivia due to a possible quite serious knee injury. So, yeah, he's away for off the pitch for at least a week. But I think if it goes really bad, we might see the last of him for the season. So that's another big blow to Palmeiras.
Talking of injuries, Christian, so Scolari, one thing he did have was he was generally supported by the board in the transfer market. He made a fair number of signings in his time at the club, including last January time, we saw the arrival of Barcos and Danino have done very well. But perhaps the big money signing was Wesley, who then within a few weeks picked up a serious injury that's kept him out for most of the season, all the season to date. Do you think that injury has had an effect on your season? Do you think he could have played a role in pushing you further up the table?
No, absolutely. I think that was a big blow. I think we have been partially unlucky. Partially, there's something perhaps that needs to be checked and double-checked at the medics department at Palmeiras, because we had an unusual amount of injuries. Of course, some of them are those that you can't really prepare yourself against. Both Valdivia and Matt Sanson. And, of course, the most difficult case was Wesley was, you know, serious knee problems, like just, you know, tearing of ligaments and all of that. So there's not much you can do about that. But there's also been a lot of muscular issues, problems. So, the the number of times that Valdivia has been off the pitch instead of on the pitch is just amazing. And I think that Wesley was sort of the major signing for Palmeiras, and he was supposed to really be an important player in Scolari's tactical setup. And as you said, he arrived, and within 2 weeks, he was on the surgery. And he's now available, at least for Kleina. His recovery was a bit faster than expected. So I think that maybe in a few weeks, a couple of weeks perhaps, he will start coming on slowly. And let's see where he is right now. I think that I think certainly that he could have made a difference. But then again, it's all speculation. Palmeiras have had troubles more on the creative side this season, and I think that will continue, especially now with Valdivia is out for the rest of the season. We'll see what happens. And Daniel Carvalho is still a bit overweight. He did play well against Milionarios for sure, but yesterday was not a good day for him, and the consistency is lacking.
Rio, we'll move off the pitch for a second, then we'll go to Christian to get more insight on it in a minute. But Palmeiras have a reputation for being one of the more turbulent Brazilian clubs, and as we both know, supporting Cruzeiro and Flamengo, there are plenty of problems with the management of Brazilian clubs. But it does seem like at times there's divides within the Palmeiras board and various arguments emerging within them, and then quotes being given to the press, and it all becomes very public with Palmeiras' support as being quite influential as well. We've spoken about before how having kind of balance off the pitch then creates the platform to have balance on the pitch. But do you think it has caused this problem for Palmeiras, or do you think it is purely the scheduling with the Copa do Brasil win and then maybe switching off at the start of the season?
No, I think my firm opinion is that the all these things happening off the pitch, on backstage at Palmeiras, as with many other teams, certainly destabilizes the performance of the sport and everything else. We can see that especially the first maybe 6 to 12 months of Scolari at Palmeiras, he was constantly in the press fighting against press releases or other things that were sort of released with information, backstage information about Palmeiras or Scolari's work or players or internal problems at Palmeiras that all the time came out in the media, and he had to respond to that, and he was one having to pick these fights instead of strong management within the club that could defend the club. It was always Scolari who had to sort of represent Palmeiras and take a stance towards these accusations that came out in the press. That of course takes focus away from his job as a coach. It hurts the squad and the players. It hurts him and his relationship with the press, which also is something very important in Brazil, because I think you feel that the press plays an important role sort of how to, in a certain sense, defining the reality as the press does in any country. So there's a lot of, maybe this is, of course, because I see things with Palmeiras' eyes, but there's a lot of times you see that another team, like São Paulo, will draw 1-1, and they will say that São Paulo won an important point playing whoever. And when Palmeiras draw 1-1, they say another disappointing result, and Palmeiras is once again back, without winning and all that. So it is important to have the press on your side. It makes or at least not against you, at least. So it will give the players and the managers more tranquility to work. And I think that Palmeiras has always been politically complicated, and you see a lot of different fighting between the political parties within the club, and that is certainly something that has not helped Palmeiras in the past and in the present. At least we see some changes now for the future, looking good. many things that the supporters themselves are sort of pushing forward and putting on the agenda to try to make the club more professional.
Do you think the addition of Cesar Sampaio at the start of the year has helped, or because he was meant to be a kind of go-between between Scolari and the board to try and control these arguments, if you like. Do you think his addition has helped?
Yes, certainly. I think that the second half of Scolari's time with Palmeiras shows that he could focus more on football. You would see Sampaio step up and defend Palmeiras when needed. Unfortunately, he also has to do that when you should have, you know, the president of Palmeiras doing it. But Sampaio, for sure, is an influential person, an important person as the middleman between the management and the coach and the squad. He's also very respected by the players. So I think he has an important role to play, and he has been playing that role ever since he started.
Maria, what's your take on all this? It must sound very familiar to your understanding of things at Flamengo.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think it really is something that most Brazilian clubs struggle with. And you know, Chris, you and I have talked at length on this podcast about the sort of lack of sort of professionalism at the management and sort of directors of football clubs in Brazil. Palmeiras certainly are in the news a lot for this type of thing, probably more so than most other clubs. And, you know, if we just look back at, you know, last year, the Kleber saga, I'm sure we all remember that and sort of the media circus that became. But at the same time, you know, you sort of referenced earlier, there are these sort of off-the-field issues. But I think, you know, as much as the Copa do Brasil win was very important for Palmeiras to sort of have, you know, a title and be able to sort of take pride and you know, still sort of reference back to their successful history. At the same time, you know, when now after they won that the Copa do Brasil and qualified for the Libertadores, that meant that they really had nothing to play for in the Brasileiro season. You know, they were never going to win the title, so certainly they weren't going to shoot for that anyways. But then, you know, the motivation for a lot of clubs of Palmeiras stature is usually the top four finish for that Libertadores position, or if not that, then at least the Sul-Americana qualifying positions. You know, after they won the Copa do Brasil, they didn't really have the motivation to play for any of that. So really all they've had in their mind since then is, okay, well, we just, you know, just have to fight against relegation. And, you know, that only sort of starts being a very serious thing in their minds more towards the latter end of the season. And, you know, essentially right now it's sort of all catching up to them. So for, you know, for the first half of the season, even two-thirds of the season, Palmeiras just didn't have too much to play for. So, you know, it does become sort of a motivational issue, and it's part of the reason why I think the Copa do Brasil shouldn't end so early. You know, I think it should be more similar to, you know, to European competitions, like in England, for example, the FA Cup. The final is only after the end of the season. I think it should be closer to that in Brazil.
Well, I think that's changing for next season, if I remember right. I think it's 2013 that the Copa do Brasil will be spread out across the year. Christian, just before we move on to another topic then, you mentioned to me earlier in the week then that Palmeiras, their deliberative council have voted in favor of adopting a direct vote for president. I think this was one of the points you said, that the fans have made some influence to see some changes at the club to try and improve things. Do you want to explain a bit how that's going to benefit the club?
Yes, certainly. That's that's one of the few but really important measures that I think that Palmeiras possibly will adopt as of maybe not 2013, but from 2014 and onwards. The Deliberate Council was actually voting on a proposal that was put forward by 81 of the Palmeiras has 300 sort of councillors that they are elected, and these are the ones that will set most of the decisions about Palmeiras, including also voting for president. And it's a very difficult way of doing things, because these counselors, half of them are appointed for life, and most of them come from very traditional families of Italian descent and Pomeranians. Some of them not, and in any case, the thing about the life appointment makes that they have sort of political ties to a very few number of very strong families that traditionally run Palmeiras. And this has created a lot of feuds inside the club and has really been an impediment to progress, both politically and specifically in the administration. So what supporters for a long time have been trying to do is try to weaken the power of the council and let the associates and the members of Palmeiras, which is more the ordinary supporters or the supporters, but still you know, more from the roots of the supporter basis, have more influence in Palmeiras. And this first step was actually the voting by the Liberal Council on its proposal to have the president and his main helpers in Palmeiras be elected through a direct vote by the members of Palmeiras and not by the council. And it passed through. So now it only has to be referendum at the General Assembly in November, and we will actually see a Palmeiras that is more open and more democratic as of 2014, possibly. So that was a huge step forward in the democratization and professionalization of Palmeiras and Football Club. And this is all basically due to tremendous work by Palmeirenses, by supporters, through mobilizations in social media, blogs, independent websites that have been raising this issue and gathering the public, sort of the popular support from Palmeirenses to not only influence some consiglieri to put forward the request, but also been doing manifestations, feeding the media with information about this democratic process, and also physically going, gathering a large group of Palmeirenses before and after meetings of the Deliberative Council and standing there with their signs and shouting and doing a lot of noise and really sort of demanding democracy. So this is the fruit of many years of work to try to change Palmeiras from within.
Well, I'm sure that we'll all agree, and hopefully Brazilian football fans all over will agree that anything that helps improve the management of a club as historic as Palmeiras is obviously a good thing, and hopefully we see Palmeiras in the news over the next couple of years for the right reasons rather than the off the field events.
Yes, perfectly.
All right, well, we'll move on to the that's going to be the final section of the show then, and we're going to have a player focus. We've just done a bit of a team focus, so now we'll move on to an individual. And we've already mentioned this player a couple of times in the show today, and it's a player I get asked about quite a lot because having already spent a period of time in Europe where he achieved moderate results, a lot of people are very interested at why he returned to Brazil so early and why he wasn't as successful as had been hoped in Europe. So we're going to be talking about Fred G, in case you haven't worked it out, the Fluminense striker who's once more going for top scorer in the Brasileirão this season. So to start off, Rio, with a whole series of topics that we can talk about Fred G. First of all, he moved to Europe very young before returning to Fluminense, playing at Lyon in France. Why do you think it didn't quite work out for him over there?
Well, you know, I think it'd be very harsh to call him a failure in Europe because I think he actually had patches at Lyon where he was quite good and scored some important goals. I think he was their top scorer at least one of the seasons that he was there. But, you know, the reality is he struggled with injuries a lot while he was there, and that's always going to hurt anybody's ability to adapt and make an impression when you're going to, if you're a Brazilian player going to Europe and trying to sort of establish yourself, you know, it's tough to deal with, you know, several kind of severe injuries that puts you out for months at a time, and that's what happened with Fred, which really is a shame. And you know, at the same time, even when he was fit, you know, he was facing a sort of stiff competition from a certain Karim Benzema, you know, the current Real Madrid player, who was at the time just sort of breaking through at that loan side. And that's always going to be tough, you know, if you're at a French club and there's a young, hot French striker coming through, he's always going to be favored over, you know, some foreign import, especially when he's scoring goals. So I think with Fred Leon was a combination of, you know, struggling with injuries and sort of this competition from Benzema that really made his time there kind of not as successful as it could have been. I think towards the end of his time there, Fredji actually ended up, you know, requesting that Leon sort of terminate his contract just because he was frustrated at his lack of opportunities. And he's the one that sort of decided to go back to Brazil and ended up at Fluminense. You know, I think he certainly has the skill to have succeeded in Europe, and maybe he just needs to go elsewhere. Maybe just needed a little bit more luck on the injury front. But, you know, it's been the benefit for Fluminense and sort of for the Brasileiro as a whole that, you know, this really, really good player has been, you know, sort of gracing the Serie A scoring charts for the past 4 years. You know, he's been top scorer. He was top scorer last year. You know, he scores, you know, he's pretty good for at least 20 goals a season usually, if he's not struggling too badly with injuries. So he's been very important.
Christian, I don't know if you remember, but last year after the Copa America, Fred was a bit scapegoated for some poor performances in the eyes of the Brazilian public. He returned to Fluminense maybe a bit out of form, and there was a couple of incidents with fans where they'd approached him outside bars, and there was some arguments about his performance levels and maybe his willingness to play for the team, etc. And then ever since then, maybe the last 14 months or so, 15 months, he just hasn't stopped scoring since.
No, that's right. I find it intriguing, actually, that he hasn't been called up to the national squad more times. I think he's played 120 matches for Brazil. And for an athlete with his experience, and as you said, he's just constantly now, as when he is able to remain healthy and free from injury, he's just he's tremendous. So I certainly think that he has not only a major part in Fluminense's ascension, but also I think that he should that's also play that, as we talked about the Cavaliere as well, should be given a chance. I'm not sure, there's only one thing that intrigues me a bit about Fred. I'm not sure how he relates to a group where he might not be playing a leader role. I think that he might, his personality sometimes can be a bit tricky. I'm not sure that he is such an easy person to deal with. But that, again, is just an impression I have, and I'm not sure if I can sort of elaborate on that further. But I think that might be one of the few reasons maybe why he hasn't been called up. Maybe there's something there that makes him more difficult to work with. But certainly at Fluminense, and even under pressure from supporters, as you mentioned, he has really been able to pull through, stay healthy, and is now, you know, once again, top scorer, and that's fantastic.
Rio, we've spoken about several players who maybe Mano Menezes has lost faith in, and we spoke about Robinho and Ramirez, who were very much casualties of the Copa America, and Fred, in a way, has also found that he played a couple of games after the tournament, but maybe through bad reviews or discontent from some of the fans, he's dropped out. And then recently he wasn't even selected for the local squad to play Argentina. But looking ahead then, so Brazil's obviously got to be planning for 2014 right now. Leandro Damião looks favourite for the number 9 shirt, and we have to assume Pato will be there if he's fit. But would you consider Fred as the third striker in the squad?
Well, I think it's tough. You know, Mano was actually asked in an interview a few weeks ago, you know, how come Fredy hasn't been called up to your most recent squads? And Mano was pretty open and honest about it. He said, you know, listen, he's a great player. He's in good form right now. But the truth is that Mano believes he's very similar in style to Damião, so he doesn't want to call up two players that he views as sort of offering the team a lot of similar characteristics, which is, you know, fair enough for a coach, right? If you're going to start, you know, let's say you start Damião, if you're going to have another striker on the bench, then you probably want somebody that can offer you, you know, a different approach and different characteristics to influence the game and change things if you need to, which is why Mano said, you know, that's why I called Fabiano up, because Fabiano is a different player from Damião and Fred. So, you know, I think there's sort of reasonable explanation for it. I'm sure Fluminense fans still feel aggravated that their player, you know, deserves to be in the national team and isn't. But at the same time, you know, at least he can keep playing for Fluminense instead of being away on Brazil duty, which is important for their title challenge. You know, whether or not he will be part of that 2014 squad, I think he certainly has a shot at it. Obviously, he'll need to maintain this type of form and make it difficult for Mano not to call him up. But, you know, it's going to be tough, I think, especially if Mano's still in charge in 2014. And you know, he does have this belief that Damião and him are too similar. And you know, it's difficult to see right now Damião not being part of that 2014 squad. So I think, you know, Fred is sort of on the outskirts of the squad at the moment.
Christian, and if you were Mano, would you call up Fred with 2014 in mind?
Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure. I really wanted to comment also on what Rio said. I think I was spot on about you know, how Brazilian fans feel about their players being called up for the national squad or not. You know, there's of course always a bit of pride, and you want your players to succeed, and it's good sort of propaganda for your club as well if you get your players called up to the national squad. But I think that more and more you hear actually supporters saying that just leave our players alone. They're doing great here, and we need them for our championships. And you know. Not that they don't care about players going to the national squad or not, but the sentiment is more toward that, actually. That's okay. Great if you recognize that they have talent, but it's also very great if you leave them be so they can focus on playing for Fluminense or for Palmeiras or whatever it is, instead of running off to Iran or to whatever to play a friendly game, and then you risk them getting injured, and they lose out on important games at home. And the added value for any Brazilian club to have a player playing in the Seleção, I think it's increasingly small, so they prefer them to stay where they are, actually.
Rio, then, to finish off today's show, we've just heard Christian talking about that very point, and Santos have been quite vocal in their calls for Neymar to be omitted from a couple of the recent Brazil squads in order to allow him to play some games for Santos in the league. But we're going to focus on Neymar for different reasons. This is our kind of funny story of the week, or more unusual news item of the week. And once again, it involves Neymar. I think it's going to be pretty much a weekly Neymar feature. Do you want to explain what you've picked out for us this week, then, Maria?
Well, there's a couple of different funny stories on the Neymar front. One is a commercial that he did for an ice cream company, and it involves Neymar getting dressed up in some various weird and goofy costumes for the commercial. So, you know, he dresses up as Elvis Presley for one of them, which is pretty funny, but then he kind of puts on this cow suit and dresses like like a butterfly and like a frog outfit. So it's kind of all these ridiculous outfits that he puts on. But, you know, it just goes to show, you know, I think an article came out not too long ago discussing how Neymar is now one of the most marketable players on earth, you know, never mind just in Brazil alone, but sort of across the world. You know, he's kind of already getting up there with the likes of Ronaldo and Messi in that sort of marketability front, which is pretty astounding considering, you know, he's still 21 and still based in Brazil. But it just goes to show sort of the star of Neymar. But, you know, it's funny to see that he has a sense of humor with these commercials and sort of has a good time with them. And then one other sort of smaller story sort of indirectly involving Neymar is this sort of wax figurine that this Brazilian artist made of Neymar, which is, you know, sort of true to life or sort of real size, scale-wise, Neymar sort of, you know, in the Brazil national team outfit. So it looks a little creepy in a lot of ways. And then there's some funny pictures of the artist sort of staring at Neymar's figure, statue quite fondly and sort of painting his lips. It all looks a little weird and creepy, but apparently it'll be a part of a series of statues that this guy is going to be making of Brazilian players to get ready for the 2014 World Cup. Not quite sure where these are going to go, but wherever it is, I think people will get a laugh out of them, and if not, get sort of rubbed a little the wrong way because, you know, they looks a little lifeless in some ways.
And just before we leave then, Christian, do you want to explain to people where they can find your blog?
Yes, certainly. They can Google anything Palmeiras or just go into anythingpalmeiras.com. As I said in the beginning of the podcast, it's possibly the only place where you find updated information about Palmeiras in English. Well, in the next few days, you will find also an exclusive interview with a poor Celtic supporter that went with his Celtic jersey to watch a Corinthians game last Sunday. Well, he didn't have to flee the stadium, but almost. He was escorted out by the police because he was harassed by Corinthians supporters who thought that he was either a Palmeirense because he was wearing white and green, or perhaps that he was mocking them, at least wearing Palmeiras colors. So he had a pretty bad experience, and you can read all about it at Anything Palmeiras in a few days.
Well, thank you for joining us, Christian. It's been a pleasure to have you this week.
It's been a pleasure. It's always my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me over.
And the same applies to you, Ria.
Absolutely. It was a good time.
And you can keep up to date with Brazilian football on SambaFoot. And if that's not enough for you, we'll be back next week with another podcast for you to listen to. See you then.